From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yo, 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 what is up, beautiful people? Yes, the weekend has flown by, and it is Monday once again. Monday, April 13th, 2015. Hopefully you all are having a great start to your week, and we are so honored here that you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your Monday afternoon. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Folks, we've got a great show in store for you all. Of course, we'll talk about the Masters as, this kid, he's unbelievable. Jordan Spieth, he's 21 years old. What am I doing with my life? I mean, my goodness, he's 21 years old and already has a green jacket. Insane in the membrane. We'll talk about Jordan's remarkable accomplishment at Augusta. We'll also talk about a big, big fish that Tom Izzo has latched on to now and has reeled him in the boat. That's right, Caleb Swanigan is a Michigan State Spartan. How about that? I'll also invite the associate editor of SpartanMag.com and Spartan Magazine, Paul Kneidike. He'll be joining me today as well. We'll as well have weekend winners, the Detroit Tigers, all of that and so much more, as well as take your calls right here on the show. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners again for this April 13th. Let's start with the Masters. 21-year-old Jordan Spieth showed maturity well beyond his years as he shot a 2-under par 70 in his final round to finish at 18-under par 270 to win his first Masters. How about that? Now, Spieth finished 4 shots ahead of second place Phil Mickelson and Justin Rose. This is his 4th victory in 4 months, putting Spieth strongly at number 2 in the world golf rankings. Now, in his first Masters appearance last year, Spieth finished tied for 2nd, so the writing has kind of been on the wall, I should say. All right, Michigan State men's basketball, they had quite a run, of course, to the Final Four over the past month, and it looks like that success might have helped on the recruiting trail as well. 5-star center Caleb Swanigan committed to Michigan State this weekend, adding to what was already a solid class for Tom Izzo. Now the 6'8", 270-pound Swanigan bolsters a front court with veterans Gavin Schilling and Matt Costello returning. Swanigan also reunites with AAU front court teammate Deontay Davis, along with the wings Kyle Ahrens and Matt McQuaid to round out the class. All right, some MSU baseball and softball weekend action. It was a dramatic weekend for the Spartan baseball team in a three-game series against Northwestern here at McLane Baseball Stadium. Now, a disappointing loss on Friday started the series. MSU had a 6-2 lead. However, the Wildcats responded with 5 unearned runs, winning that game 7-6. The next day, it was the Spartans that rallied for the win. MSU was down 6-0. Came back with 7 unanswered runs for a 7-6 walk-off win against the Wildcats, and the Spartans carried that momentum into Sunday's game, scoring a season-high 20 hits and crushing the Wildcats 14-3. The MSU softball team, they were swept by Ohio State during the weekend's 3-game series. They lost 6-4 on Friday, 8-4 on Saturday. Sunday, the game was called after 5 innings, and the Buckeyes won that one 15-5. Softball extends its losing streak now to 7 games. All right, the Detroit Tigers, they completed a 3-game sweep over the Cleveland Indians this weekend. Miguel Cabrera was just simply unstoppable. With 2 home runs, he went 11-for-14 at the plate and had 6 RBIs. Now, Detroit is 6-0 for the first time since 1985. Impressive stuff. Detroit will now take on the Pittsburgh Pirates today in the first of a 3-game series. This is the first of 2 with the Pirates this year. All right, the Lansing Lugnuts, they started their season last Thursday with an exhibition game against MSU. The across town. Showdown, of course, a win over MSU set the tone for the weekend as the Lugnuts, they played four games over the weekend, including going 3-1 in the process. The team took two of the three from Lake County and won yesterday against Fort Wayne on the road. The Lugnuts have a game every day until the 27th. All right, the Detroit Pistons, they had their most lopsided victory for the 2014-15 season against the Charlotte Hornets on Sunday, winning 116-77. It was actually the final home game at the Palace of Auburn Hills for the squad. Again, in what may be his last home game, who knows, Greg Monroe scored 17 points and 9 rebounds. Andre Drummond had another double-double, finishing with 15 points and 19 rebounds while helping hold Charlotte to the least number of points the Pistons have allowed all year. And reports have been going around that soon-to-be unrestricted free agent Greg Monroe would possibly sign with the New York Knicks this summer. Now, an unnamed league executive claimed that Monroe signing with the Knicks was, quote, as about close to a done deal as you can get, end quote. Now, however, Monroe has since denied any truth to that report. And last but certainly not least, the eighth-seeded Red Wings. They will play first-seeded Tampa Bay to open the Stanley Cup playoffs. Detroit finished the season 1-2-1 against Tampa Bay and will need top-notch goaltending in order to pull off the upset, as Tampa Bay is the highest-scoring team in the NHL. I'm very curious to see who will be the starting goalie for Detroit on Thursday. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on any of those, please call in at 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave me a comment there. I'll read it right here live on the air, and you can even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. But without further ado, hey, let's start the show.
Again, we've talked about how good he's been cutting all week long.
Yes, and that's how we start today's current sports. Welcome to the show. As always, I am your host, the man behind the mic, Al Martin. Boy, oh boy. Again, folks, our phone lines are open. They'll be open all the way up until 2 o'clock. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. How about 21-year-old Jordan Spieth at Augusta National at the Masters? He put on a show the entire weekend. Folks, it's actually the first wire-to-wire victory at the Masters dating all the way back to the 70s. How about that? Now, wire to wire means there were no ties. The leader had no ties throughout all of the four rounds in the Masters. That's simply remarkable. Simply remarkable, folks. Actually, Jordan Spieth now becomes the second youngest individual to win at the Masters. Of course, Tiger did it back in 1997 when he was also at the tender age of 21 years old. How about that? So, $1.8 million. Right in the pocket of Jordan Spieth now after winning that tournament. Phil Mickelson and Justin Rose, they were right on his heels, really, nipping at his heels, both finishing at 14 under. Really impressive stuff from both of those individuals as well. But how about Jordan Spieth, folks? It was very, very fun. Actually, the Masters, I mean, it's like the Super Bowl of golf, I've always said. It was certainly fun just sitting down and watching all four of those rounds and just seeing if this young kid could sort of just keep it up. Because we've all seen a lot of golfers have leads at the Masters, or at any major for that matter, and just trying to keep that consistency up in the game of golf throughout an entire weekend can certainly be a tall, tall order. But Jordan Spieth, I mean, one of the things that really stood out to me about this kid is that pressure does not faze him. I mean, and one of the things that really stood out to me, one of the biggest moments from the Masters came from Jordan Spieth, in my eyes, on Saturday. If you remember, when he double bogeyed on the 17th hole, round three on Saturday, and you're sitting there like, okay, he kind of opened the door up for possibly Phil, Justin Rose, or any other golfer for that matter, to maybe have a chance at catching him. And, you know, especially when he had, you know, I believe it was the second shot on the 18th where, you know, he hits the ball toward the gallery. It falls on the right side of the pin in the gallery, though, and he has to have a miracle chip shot to get out of it and have any sort of chance at saving par. But he does. You know, an unbelievable shot from that angle. It sort of drops right before on the landing area, right on the putting green, and it sort of trickles feet away from the pin. It was at that moment when I said, okay, this kid has it all. He's serious. And, you know, he's unbelievable. I mean, he's 21 years old. One of the things that really bothers me, though, when I saw the entire coverage of the Masters throughout this weekend, every single time Jordan Spieth's name was mentioned, the name Tiger Woods was also brought up. It reminds me, really, of if you go back in time, sort of to compare it to another phenomenon, happened to be in the game of basketball, of course, when Michael Jordan was kind of taking over, taking the basketball world by storm. Remember, when he retired from the game back in 1998, there were a plethora of players that sort of came through the basketball system that were dined as possibly being the next Michael Jordan. If you remember, Penny Hardaway was one of those players. Grant Hill was another one of those players. I mean, there's countless others that were always pegged as the next Michael Jordan. Golf right now, I think, is starting to realize that, of course, Tiger Woods isn't the same Tiger Woods of old. I doubt that we'll possibly see the Tiger Woods that we saw back in his heyday when he was just blowing competitors out, blowing the field out on an average of 7 strokes or more. We won't see that again from Tiger. And golf, the golf world is starting to realize that. So naturally, in the society that we live in, we start to realize that, okay, we need to find someone else to sort of hold that torch. Who will be the next Tiger Woods? Folks, I can answer that question. We will never see another Tiger Woods. I doubt in my lifetime that I will see another epidemic in the game of golf that we saw from Tiger Eldrick Woods when he was at the creme de la creme of his game. Now, don't get me wrong, Jordan Spieth is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Actually, again, the second youngest Masters tourney winner. Again, Tiger Woods was among that as well. So I get that comparison. But again, can we stop comparing greatness? I understand it's in our nature. We always want to see who's the next guy coming up. Who is the next best in the game? LeBron James throughout most of his career in basketball has always been compared to the greats of Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan. Same thing with Kobe Bryant. But at some point, you got to stop comparing Jordan Spieth to Tiger Woods and just let Jordan Spieth be Jordan Spieth. You got to appreciate his greatness, folks. It will never be as of Tiger Woods. I doubt we'll ever see that again. But man, oh man, was it fun to watch this young kid handle himself throughout 4 rounds on the biggest stage of golf. It's unbelievable. And naturally, I get it. As a society, we will place now unrealistic expectations on the shoulders of young Jordan Spieth because he is a Masters champion now. He is very, very young at 21 years old. And he has shown that he deserves to be on the stage. This is no fluke, folks. Again, you know, as I said in our quick hit headliners, I mean, he's been on the Masters stage and come just short of winning it all. And now, and you know, it's very interesting because if you look at the scorecards of that of Phil Mickelson, that of Justin Rose, those two more so because, again, they finished 4 strokes behind of Jordan Spieth. Again, Jordan was 18 under, Phil Mickelson 14 under. But if you would have told Phil Mickelson before this tourney even started that he would shoot, you know, let's say, you know, 70, 68, 67, and 69 over the weekend, which are impressive numbers, to get him to 14 under. If you would have told Phil Mickelson that he would be 14 under on the final round of the Masters, I think Phil might have been, you know, hey, talking to the tailor or whoever issues the green jackets and saying, okay, I like my fitting here. Here's my dimensions here. Because I think Phil Mickelson would have said, hey, I'm going to win the tourney. If I'm throwing up a negative 14 on the weekend and shooting 3 rounds in the 60s, yeah, I'm winning the Masters. Nobody would have fathomed that Jordan Spieth was going to come out and have the weekend that he did. And again, 28 birdies. You heard in the montage before I went on my rant here. That was when he had 26 birdies at the time. But 28 birdies, setting a Masters record. How impressive is that? And this kid's only going to get better. He's only going to get better. 21 years old. That is fun stuff. Now, when looking at the overall picture and scheme of things here, you know, for Jordan Spieth, again, this is it right here. I mean, when you talk about golf, everyone, even just a casual sports fan, you may not pay attention to the game of golf all season long, but you will at least tune in at least one of those rounds throughout the weekend to see what's going on in the Masters. The Masters is that big. So when you're Jordan Spieth and when you're 21 years old, you're so young, and you win the Masters, I had to sit back and ask myself when watching him put on that green jacket, I mean, what motivates this kid now? What motivates Jordan Spieth when you have accomplished winning the Masters? When you put on that green jacket at such a young age? Now, for Tiger Woods, you know, since I'm going to feed into this whole comparison now with Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods, for Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods was sort of one of those freak athletes that was just uber competitive. I mean, it's so unbelievable watching Tiger Woods' career, and one of the reasons why he's one of my favorite athletes is because Tiger Woods, he didn't just want to beat you. Tiger Woods, I always use this analogy. Tiger Woods is one of those guys, one of those rare guys in sports, rare personalities in sports, that if he's playing his grandma in Goldfish, he's not just trying to beat grandma. He's trying to stop on grandma's throat. He is uber competitive like that. Kobe Bryant was the same way. Michael Jordan was the same way. Some of the greats in football, Joe Montana had that competitive nature. I mean, those athletes are one of a kind, folks. Now, I don't know if Jordan Spieth has that mentality, but looking at just this kid's overall game, I mean, he's going to be competitive, again, for years to come. So what motivates Jordan Spieth now after winning the Masters? He's going to have to dig deep now and say, okay, I want to keep this up. I got to be consistent. I want to be among the consistent greats in this game, and I can't get complacent with a green jacket, which, let's be honest here, can be very easy to do. But maintaining that lead over the weekend against guys like Justin Rose and Phil Mickelson, which are, let's be honest here, hallmarks in the game of golf, was impressive beyond this kid's years. And another thing about Jordan Spieth's game, when really breaking down his game, again, I watched most of the Masters yesterday. I had nothing else to do on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, right? So watching Jordan Spieth's game, folks, something that also stood out to me is that he's not a power guy. You know, he's not like a Phil Mickelson who's going to average near 300 yards off the tee. You know, he's not that type of a guy. Something that really stood out about Jordan's game is that he plays within his means. I saw a stat over the weekend that showed that he actually hit 12 of 14 greens in regulation during that final round on Sunday, folks. Meaning that, yeah, he may not be getting a lot of distance on that. I mean, hey, for the average guy here, you're talking to a guy who averages like, you know, not even near 200 off the tee, okay? So for an average guy talking about 270 to 280 off the tee, that's pretty impressive from an average standpoint. When you look at the rest of the field, though, when you got guys like Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Rory McIlroy, Ian Poulter, when those guys are knocking it off the tee near 300 yards, yeah, it kind of makes that 270 look kind of minuscule. But with Jordan not being this power guy off the tee, he does a great job of just making quality shots. You know that the ball is going to be in the middle of the fairway. You know that he's going to put himself in position most of the time to hit a solid shot, and his execution is going to be flawless. And that's exactly what you saw from Jordan Spieth. The young kid he's going to have a bright future. This is not the only time, I'm sure, throughout the golf season that you are going to hear Jordan Spieth's name mentioned here on Current Sports and other media outlets, for that matter, in the game of golf as well. Now, Tiger Woods, just to talk about Tiger Woods, because this was also a big event, because, you know, you had Tiger Woods. And how about the final day, too? I mean, you had, you know, Justin Rose, you know, and Phil Mickelson paired together, and you had, you know, Jordan Spieth in that mix as well. And then you had Tiger Woods being paired with Rory McIlroy. I mean, how cool is that, right? When you got two of the biggest names in golf paired along with each other. Pretty cool stuff. But when you talk about Tiger Woods, again, a lot of hoopla was also made about the Masters when it comes to Tiger Woods, because this was his return after taking quite a long time off from the game of golf. So a lot of people were kind of speculating, okay, Tiger's back. How is he going to play? Will he make the cut? Because we've seen Tiger Woods struggle to make the cut in major tournaments in recent years, folks. So for Tiger to put together a weekend in which, one, he made the cut, And two, at one point, I looked at the leaderboard and Tiger was about in third or fourth place competing. I should say, I'll use competing very, very lightly because when Jordan Spieth at that point, I mean, he was about he had like a five-stroke lead at one point. So Tiger being in third or fourth place, he still was about, you know, 7 or 8 strokes off from the lead. But at the same time, Tiger Woods, you saw his name on that leaderboard somewhere. And that has to be, if you're Tiger Woods and you're flying on your plane back to your mansion somewhere and you're thinking about the weekend that you had at the Masters, you got to crack a smile. And you have to be encouraged because Tiger Woods did not play bad, folks. He didn't play bad. I mean, looking at his tournament stats for the Masters, he had a driving distance of 285. That's usual for Tiger Woods. He always has immensely a lot of power off the tee. Driving accuracy, could have been better, 53%. Greens and regulation, that always has been something Tiger Woods has struggled with, even dating back to the 1997 glory years. The thing that makes Tiger Woods so special in his game was that, yeah, he may have not been the greatest, you know, when it comes to accuracy and hitting the greens. He may not be that accurate off the tee, but those second and third shots to get the ball close to the pin, he was a master at. Also, you know, 15 birdies, 12 bogeys, yeah, definitely that could have improved. He had one eagle. Overall, Tiger Woods making the cut, having a solid weekend, and seeing him in some competitive form in that leaderboard has to be encouraging. In my opinion, I thought that his round three of 68 was the most impressive round that he had. I mean, he had six birdies on round three. Impressive stuff. And he hung with, you know, some of the best. I mean, he was paired up with, of course, Rory McIlroy, who at one point, I mean, him and Tiger were both tied going into that final day. So at the end of the day, hey, hats off to Tiger Woods. You know, there was a moment where, my heart jumped a little bit because there was a moment where he hit a shot, I believe maybe it was out of the pine straw, just out of a rough area, and he said that his finger or some joint within his hand popped out of place, and he had to pop it back in place, and you could see him just noticeably kind of shaking it off. But overall, hey, if Tiger stays healthy, right now I think it's safe to say that he could be on the up and up. He could be on the up and up, folks. Is Tiger Woods going to be back? Let me bite my tongue on that one, folks. But still, a competitive round, good 4 rounds of some sort of consistency has to be encouraging. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite now two individuals here on WKAR's Current Sports today to weigh in on, of course, the madness at the Masters with Jordan Spieth. Man, impressive stuff from Jordan Spieth. And, of course, a subject that we're definitely going to touch on before we get to our guest for today's Current Sports on Caleb Swanigan, now dining the green and white, the number 14 prospect in all of the nation. How about that? But I want to invite now, of course, Alex Shark, engineer of WKR's Current Sports. How you doing, Alex?
Pretty well, man, pretty well. What a performance by Tiger, huh?
Yeah, it was solid. It was solid. But more so, how about Jordan Spieth? I mean, unbelievable. I mean, what this kid was able to do, unbelievable. Well, welcome to the show, Alex. And also, of course, Ben Stram, Current Sports beat reporter. How you doing, Ben?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
How about Jordan Spieth, man? He is so good.
He is
just so good. How good is he going to be, though? That's my thing. Like, how good can he be?
That's the question when you really look at it, I think, Ben. Because, you know, I think that it's kind of unfair for the kid, even though when you win a Masters, attention and comparison is always going to be brought up. But again, can we at some point, we always do this in society, we try to compare greatness to other greats, and you're starting to see right now Jordan Spieth be compared left and right to Tiger Woods. Just enjoy this kid right now.
Right.
He's going to be a kid who's going to win a lot. He's going to win a lot of money, and he's going to be among the best for years to come, I think, at 21.
He's already been winning before this, and he was 20 years old last year coming in second place. That's nothing to, you know, that's incredible what he's doing. It kind of makes me want to reevaluate my life. I'm 22 years old. You know, it's like, geez.
Right. I said
golf is
thing.
Where the money is, huh? Like, sheesh.
I'm telling you, man, and he's very, very good at it now. But, all right, folks, well, I want to transition now. I want to talk about a big addition to the MSU men's basketball team. Of course, this word got out last week, on the heels of last week. And again, when looking at, you know, the incredible run that this team had in the Final Four, to get to the Final Four, even though they lost to Duke, still an incredible run. I mean, just what, a week after that? I mean, you have this big, big commitment from five-star forward, Caleb Swanigan, And again, looking at it, the Spartans now have the number three recruiting class for the year, this year, 2015, according to 247sports.com and the 247 Sports Composite, which combines all rankings from major recruiting services. Michigan State is sitting pretty at number three. I mean, the addition of Kayla Swanigan, first off, I got to ask you, Ben, I mean, did you see this thing coming?
I did not, you know, and it was crazy. The whole day leading up to the announcement, everybody was saying California was going to be the lead for him, and it really came out of nowhere. Everybody was surprised. I even heard that the coaches at Michigan State were surprised because there have been all these rumors swirling about getting these transfers possibly with the last scholarship, and he ended up pulling the recruitment. And you look at Duke and what they were able to do, and you saw Justice Winslow and the way the game is called these days, and they were able to attack the paint. You know, you're going to have Yaron Harris next year to slash and attack. You're going to have possibly a healthy Javon Best. And then you saw in Duke, they had the post threat. Mm-hmm. We never had that.
Right.
And Caleb Swanigan gives us that post threat. So Izzo talked about it. He wanted to improve the roster, and this is huge. This is a huge addition to the Michigan State's basketball team.
Yeah, it's actually the highest recruit dating all the way back to, of course, when Michigan State was able to land Shannon Brown. I believe Shannon was number four in the nation at the time back in 2003. Alex, what is your reaction to Caleb Swanigan, my man?
Yeah, no, definitely a very high-profile recruit. The only thing I would say is I believe Michigan State basketball needs more height more than anything, and I'm not saying that Caleb Swanigan can't play like a 6'10 or 6'11 big man, but looking at some of the height that they face with Harrell at Louisville, the 7-footer like Okafor, I think that Michigan State basketball needs someone that's 6'10 or above, and they are getting that with Deonta Davis. But I do think that with the already established big men of Gavin Schilling and Marvin Clark, I would have liked the next big men signing to be a little bit bigger. But again, you can't take away the skill that this guy offers. I think he'll be an excellent addition, a playmaker at the power forward position, a bona fide scorer, and I think overall just a great pickup for the Michigan State Spartans.
Well, when talking about the size, I really think that Swanigan's girth, if anything, sort of makes up for that height, Alex. I think he's 6'8", 270. He's a five-star center. I sat back and watched his highlight tape actually over the weekend. The kid's good. The kid's not good. He's great, actually. Very impressive. I actually got the opportunity to see Deonta Davis of Muskegon during his high school career. I mean, just imagine putting those two on the court. I mean, my goodness. People are going to be definitely a little nervous to play the Spartans this year just looking at those two alone. So I really think that when you look at this recruit, landing Caleb Swanigan, the number 14 player in the nation, this recruit really sends a message that Tom Izzo can land the McFish. I really do. And, you know, Tom Izzo takes a lot of flack, you know, from a lot of analysts out there, even fans alike here in Michigan for not being able to land the top recruits, the five-star recruits. But now I think him landing Swanigan now, the big question for me is how consistent this quote-unquote phenomenon can be for Tom right now.
Right. And, you know, Alex mentioned the height issue. Well, the thing is, he's got a 7'3" wingspan.
Yeah, he does.
Which really helps him compete down low with the big guys. And he's very good at carving out space. And, you know, losing Dawson's going to be huge, but we have a defensive forward, Davis, coming in anyways that's going to help huge on defense. So you just look at the differences in the players that we're bringing in and who we already have coming in. It's just it looks very promising for the team.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, when you talk about landing a recruit this big, five-star recruit, number 14 in the nation, the thing about this is, you know, again, I've always said this. I mean, Tom Izzo, again, he does get a lot of flack for not being able to land those four or five stars. Because, again, I always said that the high school kid coming from whatever high school they're coming from, those big recruits, they want that quick ticket to the NBA. Mm-hmm. Historically, when you look at Michigan State, this is a program where you are not going to be usually one and done. You know, that's what history bodes. So I don't know if Swanigan will be a one and done player, but at the end of the day, I do think that coaches across the board, if you want to be competitive against the Dukes, Kansases, Kentuckys of the world, and really realistically compete for a national championship, you have to be able to land those 4 to 5 star recruits.
Right.
And I think that's why this addition right here, seeing as though Tom Izzo can turn anything into gold, look at what he did with this year's team. Just imagine if he had a Caleb Swanigan, a 5-star on his team this year.
Right. When it comes down to it, it comes down to talent accumulation, and this is a huge fish for Izzo to catch. And you look at the squad last year, the talent was really lacking there at times, you know. Like I said, we didn't have a go-to guy necessarily until Trice came on at the end of the year. And Iran Harris is going to be huge. People forget he averaged 17 points per game as a sophomore at West Virginia. Had a year off to play some point guard on the scout team. So backup point guard is going to be a problem next year, but hopefully he can handle some of those minutes. You know, and you look at the overall depth. You've got, 14 players who look to be pretty good players for Tom Izzo next year. It's going to be – the future's bright. It really is.
Yeah, when you look at the others joining Swanigan, I mean, you got Deontay Davis, of course, as I just mentioned, an AAU teammate of Swanigan's from Muskegon. He's also a 5-star 4 recruit. Ranked number 23 in the country. The Spartans have also signed Matthew McQuaid, of course, a 4-star shooting guard from Texas, ranked number 71 in the country, and Kyle Ahrens, a 3-star shooting guard, ranked number 158. So impressive stuff nonetheless, and we're going to talk about this more in just a second when we invite our guest for today's Current Sports. But we do have a caller right now on line one. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. It's our good friend. How you doing, Ray?
Hey, my friend. You have a good weekend?
Oh, it was fantastic. Beautiful weekend, first of all, and then to watch the Masters. I was pretty much glued to my TV watching golf all weekend, Ray.
Yeah, I did, too. Your buddy went and seen Sweet Reggie. He didn't break down and pay $20 and buy one.
Oh, not yeah, I still have to do that. I still have to do that, Ray.
Tell your buddy there that he went and buy one. But I had to break down. It's only $20.
Who's that? Alex, referring to?
Yeah, Alex. You know how
Alex. Gotcha. Well, I'm going to have to talk to him about that after the show. How about that, Ray?
Yeah, I tell him to buy one. Break down so you can hear those 12 jokes about the girl. Anyways, you still call Michigan the favorite after the recruiting? I know that guy up here. He can really play some basketball. He's a Spartan up here at high school.
Yeah, he's from Fort Wayne, right?
Yeah.
Swanigan's from Fort Wayne, Indiana, I know. So you have you gotten a chance to see him in person, Ray?
He's a heck of a basketball player.
Yeah, I heard he's unbelievable. I mean, I've only seen highlights, and of course with highlights, you're going to show you the highlights. You know what I mean? Every made basket, every good thing, right? I haven't seen him in an actual game, but I heard, I mean, he's through the roof. He's a 5-star, for goodness sake, right, Ray?
Yeah, I haven't seen him either, but I read it in the paper all the time. He's really good. Well, we'll see. You know, some can go to the next level, and some can't right away. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see. But I was watching Tiger over the weekend, and he does chip a lot better than he was doing, but you can't be in 16 out of 18 fairways, miss them, and hit behind the woods. And I'll tell you, if me and you did that, we'd be 10 or 20 over. He was only one over. I mean, it was unbelievable the way that guy can get out of trouble.
Yeah.
He's in the trees. If we hit the ball in the trees like that, we'd be spending 4 or 5 shots getting out.
Yeah.
He gets out one shot.
And that's the thing about Tiger. When you look at Tiger's overall career, Ray, I mean, he's never been accurate off the tee. Let's be honest here. Tiger, though, has always been very powerful off the tee.
Right.
So when he does get himself in those situations, he can use a sand wedge or a pitching wedge to get out and get very close to the pin. I mean, that's what Tiger Woods does. And just imagine, if he does fine-tune those green and regulation miscues, I mean, just imagine, hey, Tiger may be back. I don't know. I'm hoping.
He could be up there with Spott, the guy that won that tournament, or, you know, Rory beat him up pretty good Sunday. He had a 66, and Tiger had a 73. But Tiger was in trouble all day, where Rory was on the greens waiting for him to get out of the woods.
Exactly. That's very, very true and a very good point.
That's the big difference. You can't play out of the woods like that and expect to win. But I'll tell you what, he's a magician just getting out of there like he does.
Right, exactly. And on that final round, he actually had 5 bogeys, only 2 birdies on the day. So, yeah, definitely struggled. He shot a 73 for the day. And, again, you know, another thing in Tiger Woods' games, I do think that he has to become a better putter as well. That was also something that Tiger was a genius at. I mean, no one could hang with Tiger when it came to a putting contest. And I think Tiger does need to fine-tune that part of his game as well.
One thing I'll tell you, he can get away with that at the Masters. He won't get away with that in the U.S. Open because they have deep rough. They bury that rough.
Yeah, that course is no joke, Ray.
And same with the British Open or the PGA coming up. He won't get – that's about the only one you can get away with at the Masters because they got woods where sometimes you have an opening to get out.
Right, right, yep.
You don't have that at U.S. Open usually, or because the British Open, they have those bunkers where you have to take a ladder to get down there to hit it.
Right, that is true, yep.
And then, you know, the PGA Championship usually has thick rough too.
Right, exactly,
so
yeah.
It's going to be interesting before the summer's out, see how he does on his woods, because if he don't get his woods down – he's not going to win again.
Well, we'll certainly see, man. I'm really pulling for him because, as you know, Ray, I've voiced it here on the show before. He is my favorite athlete. You know, there's that little bit of everybody, I think, that, you know, is a casual fan of the golf game that saw that dominance that Tiger Woods once had in the game that just wishes we see any sort of glimpse of the Tiger that we saw in the past. So we'll certainly see. Only time will tell, Ray.
One thing I do like about him, he didn't slam his club down and use God's name in vain Sunday. I'm hoping he'll straighten up on that attitude.
Well, hey, you know, he's fine-tuning his personality as well since that incident.
You got to give it a little bit of time. Hopefully he'll get a little better all the time. But it's tough. I'm not saying it's easy because when you're playing golf, it can be frustrating. You know that.
It's a frustrating game. Sure, yeah.
But they all are. Think about it. All the sports are frustrating at times.
Right, right.
We all want things to go our way, and sometimes they're just not going to go our way, right?
That's true. That is very true, Ray. Hey, Ray, always.
I'm going to break down and buy Sweet Reggie for you.
I'm going to talk to Alex about that after the show.
All right, buddy. Gotcha.
Thanks a lot, Ray. One of a kind, Ray. Got to love that, right? All right, LaFone, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Paul Canindyke, associate editor of SpartanMag.com and Spartan Magazine. Paul will dive into, of course, Caleb Swanigan, the addition to the MSU men's basketball team. And, hey, we'll talk MSU spring football as well with Paul. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy Monday, folks. It is April 13th, 2015. One thing that I'm certainly grateful for is that the weather is finally starting to, I guess you can say, turn the corner after being beat up all winter with, you know, that brutal winter we had. It wasn't that bad. I will say it wasn't as bad as last year's winter. I will say that. But we're finally starting to see, you know, 70s, you know, 60s here in mid-Michigan. It's like that right now outside. It's expected to be like that all week, even though it's raining outside right now. My goodness, I'm just glad that finally we are starting to see a little bit of glimpse of spring. So hopefully you're having a good one out there, folks. I want to remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV tapes this Wednesday, just like we do each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. I'll be sitting down with Bob Knickerbocker, who has spent nearly 32 years on the Michigan State athletic staff. He, of course, announced that he will retire from the university effective June 30th. Knickerbocker has served as MSU's head athletic equipment coordinator since 1983. Definitely look forward to sitting down with Bob. Again, if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, all you got to do is simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. Definitely looking forward to sitting down with Bob. Chatted with him on the phone this morning, and it's going to be a good taping. I tell you that one that's going to be really laid back and fun. I'll give you a sneak peek into that how that mood of that interview is going to go. So it's going to be a fun time. Again, just go to wkr.org to sign up online to be a part of that live studio audience this Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He is the associate editor of SpartanMag.com and Spartan Magazine. He covers MSU football and basketball. Paul Canindyke, how you doing, Paul?
Hey, I'm doing really good, Al.
How you doing, Paul? Thanks a lot for joining me on the show today. Well, first of all, again, we talked about, of course, the incredible addition for the MSU men's basketball team. Of course, getting word last week that Caleb Swanigan will be a part of this team next year. I mean, first of all, I got to ask you, Paul, how big of a get is this for MSU?
I think it's a huge get for Michigan State in that, you know, he's probably about as complete a scorer as they've gotten in terms of a big man, you know, since maybe a Paul Davis, since or Zach Randolph. I mean, he's a guy that's going to make an instant impact on the offensive side of the court immediately, and he's a guy that Tom Izzo's been after since he was in ninth grade. So, you know, we've seen a lot of these high-profile, you know, recruitments that come down the late signing period in April. We've seen a lot of them go other ways. Michigan State's usually on the losing end of that. But really the first time since, 2012 when they landed Gary Harris late, they've been able to pull one of these late recruitments off. And I think to a lot of people it was a stunner because, you know, if you talk to Tom Izzo after Swanigan signed or any of the staff, you know, from what I understand, both staffs at Michigan State and Purdue were told less than an hour after he announced that he's going to Michigan, less than an hour before he was announced that he's going to Michigan State, that he was indeed going to Cal. So this was one of those shocking type things. And I think he just had like a last minute change of heart. He realized that maybe playing in front of a half empty gym, you know, at a time slot where no one's watching on TV wasn't what he wanted to do.
And also, Paul, on that same token of him making that decision to become a Spartan, I mean, how big of a role do you think that MSU, again, going to a Final Four, played in that decision?
Well, I think that was part of it. I mean, I think like when it came really down to it, and he looked at the schools that were his finalists, of course, he had offers from everybody, Kentucky, Duke, you name it. But his three finalists, the three schools that I think had the best chance of him, of landing in Purdue, Michigan State, and Cal, when you look at those three schools, I think going to a Final Four really does set the table, does set it apart. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, he was interviewed up at the Nike Hoop Summit a couple days ago, and that's one of the things he said. You know, he kind of feels like this team is hungry, and that's one of the things he wanted to be part of. I think that his guardian, Roosevelt Barnes, a lot of people had projected that he might be pushing towards Cal because of his connection with Quanzo Martin. But from one of my understandings, that Barnes was pushing for Michigan State for quite a while. And I think that was one of the things, just the opportunity to play at Michigan State, learn from Tom Izzo. And when you're a kid going to college, I mean, everyone talks about wanting to be one and done or wanting to play in the NBA. And of course that's the end dream, but you know, these guys, even the one-and-done guys, want to go to college and experience the Final Four. It's something that, you know, that's really kind of life-changing, and it's something that, you know, that they should take into account when they make the decision.
Yeah, that is certainly true, Paul. Now, of course, this is the highest-rated recruit for Michigan State since 2003, when, of course, Shannon Brown, who was the number four player in the country at the time, became a Spartan. Now, you talk about, you know, historically, how Michigan State has sort of been on the short end of the stick when trying to land those big five-star recruits. First off, I want to ask you, Paul, why do you think that is so?
Do you want the politically correct answer, or do you want the real answer?
Give me the realness, Paul. Come on now.
Okay. I will. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. You know, Izzo mentioned this a couple months ago when he was asked about recruiting Chicago, and he talked about middlemen. So I'll use that phrase. Middlemen are involved in recruitment to these high-profile athletes, and you've got a lot of people trying to push kids in different directions for various reasons, and sometimes in the case of Caleb Swanigan, you had his guardian Roosevelt Barnes, who is one of the biggest football, one of the biggest agents in NFL football. He's an agent, and he pushed him towards Michigan State, so it worked out positively for Michigan State. But when you look at some of these high profile recruitments, there is a lot of people pushing in a lot of different directions, and I think sometimes the kid isn't always making the choice based on, you know, what he feels or what he sees. I think a lot of it is, guys are making choices for various reasons. You know, some of them are good, and some of them probably aren't so good. I mean, you don't want to, as an 18-year-old kid, you don't want to think of that guy as a potential moneymaker for his family, but in a lot of cases, that is the case. I mean, you look at a guy like Cliff Alexander, who Michigan State was, right in the thick of things with all the way along in the process, and then it kind of fell out at the end. Looking back, it's probably a good thing Michigan State didn't sign him, because we wouldn't be talking about Michigan State having gone to a Final Four. We'd be talking about Michigan State, what kind of trouble they might be in with the NCAA. But I mean, there's just a lot of different factors at work, and I think Michigan State has done well with some of those guys. They haven't done as well with those guys when they're on a national stage. If they're in the local sphere, if they're in that 5-hour radius like Swanigan is, I think they have done pretty well with those guys. Even going back to Gary Harris, you know, there was a string there where Michigan State was getting some of those guys. You look at Keith Appling, McDonald's All-American, Gary Harris, and then Adrian Payne. Gary Harris and Adrian Payne had some big-time offers, and Michigan State was able to pull that out. So I think when you go after a high-profile kid like that, if you go after a lot of them, you are going to swing and miss. I mean, you know, even Kentucky doesn't get everyone they want. Duke neither. But I think if you're going after exclusively those guys, you're going to have a high swing and miss rate. And I think what's troublesome from that aspect is the last few classes, there hasn't been as much talent in terms of top to bottom. So if you miss on those guys, the guys that you're bringing in are really by and large projects. And I think that's really kind of showed up in the last this year especially, you don't see a lot of good point guards out there. I think that's because there's been a lot of weakness at point guard. And I think one of the reasons you're seeing so many schools go after transfers and target transfers is because of the last two classes. There just has not been a lot of talent. So everybody's going after a small pool of players, and I think that maybe that's why in the last few years Michigan State's had a harder time, signing top notch like McDonald's All-American types, in addition to the stuff that the underbelly of basketball recruiting, which I think a lot of people are aware of.
Yeah, that is certainly true, Paul, and a very good take in that conversation. Now, and as far as those five-star recruits are concerned, you talk about how in many cases, the kid isn't always the one making the final decision. Do you think the NCAA, or even high school athletics alike, is doing enough to sort of alleviate that very problem?
I don't think they can. I really don't. I think the NCAA is an organization that polices. I think what you're seeing now is teams that get busted for stuff are getting busted for, like, academic fraud. When you look at, what happened with Tennessee and their coach that they just let go.
Right.
You know, or even North Carolina. I just don't think there's enough. You got to have first of all, a lot of it's innuendo and accusation. I mean, if money's changing hands, it's probably cash. It's hard to track and that type of thing. So, the other thing is the NCAA is making a ton of money on this. They don't want top teams to get busted. And there's TV money is such a big part of it. Whereas back in the day, like SMU football, for example, they got the death penalty. Now I don't think you'd see a program get the death penalty because there's so much tied up in TV revenue and contracts for the entire conference. I just don't think the NCAA can do their job as a policing power, and I don't think there's any kind of deterrent, anything out there really to deter teams from kind of going after guys like Wild Wild West. I think it was Dan Dockich a couple of years ago on his radio show who said if he had to do it over again as a high school coach or as a college coach, he'd cheat his butt off because there's no deterrent really.
Yeah, that is that's very, very true. Yeah, he's speaking the realness, Paul. Again, Paul Cunnendike, associate editor, SpartanMag.com and Spartan Magazine, chatting with us here on WKAR's Current Sports. All right, now, Paul, when looking at the MSU men's basketball team, do you think we will start to see the Spartans snag these type of players on a regular basis possibly?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to snag them on a regular basis, but I do think that when you're going to Final Fours, when you're having success, when you put some guys in the NBA, like Michigan State's done like last year, Gary Harris and Adrian Payne, I think those guys are more available. I think when you look at in-state guys, a guy like Brian Bowen from Saginaw, Arthur Hill, he's a consensus top 20 guy in the class of 2017. I think Michigan State's got a great chance with him. I think when you're looking at the state of Michigan, looking at the state of Ohio, if you've got five-star guys, high four-star guys, you can get those. And I think you can get guys that are top 25 if you're Michigan State, if you get in early enough. Deontay Davis is a great example of that. He's kind of unranked when Michigan State got a commitment from him. Now he's a McDonald's All-American, number 23 player in the Rivals.com, top 150 for 2015. But you got to make an effort to get in there early. And I think going all the way back to Shannon Brown, I mean, Tom Izzo was one of the first guys to recruit Shannon Brown. He pulled out all the stops in that recruitment. So I think you can get there. I think Michigan State, has done a nice job with those guys. But then again, when you're competing against North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, and some of those other schools, I mean, you're not always going to win. And the problem with that, going after those five stars, is those guys drag out the recruiting process till the late signing period. So by the time those guys make their decisions, all the other available guys, the top 75 guys, those guys might have already been signed with another school. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to have a fallback plan if you're going to go all in with those five-star recruits.
So you're gambling, so to speak. Exactly.
Yeah, you are in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that is very, very true. And looking at, and you talk about the Dukes and Kentuckys of the world, I mean, do you think that MSU must get these caliber of players if they are to sort of realistically to compete for a national championship, at that type of level?
I don't buy that at all. I really don't.
Okay.
If you can get top 75 guys, you can get so-called high upside projects. I mean, when you look at some of the guys that are going to go in the next year's draft, R.J. Hunter, the kid from Georgia State. Now, he's a guy that Michigan State had on campus multiple times. He played AAU ball with Gary Harris. Michigan State really kind of passed on him. You look at Vince Hunter from UTEP, a guy that's projected to go in the draft. That's a guy that Michigan State had on campus, had in the Izzo shootout. He's a guy that they passed on. So I think if you identify guys, the big thing is getting guys that have the upside, have the athleticism and the ceiling. Everyone wants to look at the Kentucky example, but I think the Wisconsin example is just as apt. There's different ways to do it, and I think if you're getting good talent, guys that develop, you can get to the Final Four. You can win it all, and I think Michigan State's team next year, I think they've got the depth, the ability, and the experience to make a serious push for that. But you look at Wisconsin this year. If it wasn't for a few calls here or there, I think they would have won it, and then everyone would be talking about the four-year guy and his role in getting a school championship. I think Michigan State last year, if they had been healthy, they would have won a national championship with four-year guys. There's different ways to do it. I think Kentucky is kind of the exception of the rule. Mm-hmm. But when you look at what John Calipari's done in Kentucky, think about it. He's got one national championship. Think of how many McDonald's All-Americans he's had.
Right.
Tom Izzo, one national championship. And he hasn't had near as many McDonald's All-Americans. A lot of it's about player development. A lot of it's about chemistry. So it's not always about top-end talent. Otherwise, UCLA would have been celebrating a national championship. Some of those guys just don't gel together. You got to have guys on the same page. And if a guy's coming to your school expressly for the reason that they want to be a first-round draft pick and they're not focused on team goals, you're not going to be very good.
Yes, you certainly have to look at the bigger picture, folks. Paul Konendyk, Associate Editor of SpartanMag.com and Spartan Magazine. Of course, Paul, I want to dive into, of course, really briefly before we get you out of here. The MSU football team, of course, held its first spring scrimmage on Friday with the defense topping the offense. Safety Monte Nicholson had two INTs for touchdowns. What are you looking forward to seeing out of this month's spring game on April 25th?
Yeah, I don't know. The spring game, I just want to see how much further guys like Monte Nicholson, guys like Malik McDowell have come. I mean, the other thing that popped out to me about the spring game stats, Malik McDowell in there on a goal line stand. These guys that played last year, guys from that 2014 class, are really coming along. I want to see how good this front seven is on defense, because I think if that front seven is good, it's going to cover a lot of ills that might exist in the secondary. And I think when you see guys like Monte Nicholson, the two pick sixes, and then Darian Hicks had another one, when you look at that kind of stuff and they're going against a veteran offense, that kind of makes me feel better about the 2015 season. But I think if you want to compete for a national championship, your defensive front seven has to be outstanding, particularly in the defensive line. And I think this defensive line might be national championship caliber if guys like Demetrius Cooper come along, guys like Malik McDowell take the next step. I think they're going to be pretty darn good. And they've got to fill some holes in the secondary. But young guys like Monte Nicholson, there's a lot to like about a guy like that.
And what about the backfield, Paul? I see that Madre London and Gerald Holmes, they split the majority of the carries at running back. London had 15 carries for 47 yards, while Holmes gained 39 yards on 14 attempts, including a 3-yard touchdown run. Who do you think will get the majority of the carries?
I don't know who's going to get the majority of the carries, but those are kind of numbers that I expect to see in the spring football session against a team that's a top run defense. I think anytime running backs chunk yards, in a spring football scenario, that's a bad sign for the defense. I think you're going to have a 3-man rotation. I think Holmes and London are going to be in there, but I think LJ Scott, kid out of the Youngstown area, 5-star tailback, he's got all the tools. He's a multi-dimensional player, and I think at some point next season he's going to start pushing up in there where he might be the starter. Maybe he's not going to be, but I think he's going to make an impact like Le'Veon Bell did when he was a freshman. But right now, if anybody out there is worried about the rushing numbers, I would just say, hey, you do not want your running backs running for a lot of yards in spring football.
Yeah.
But I will also point out that usually the second scrimmage of spring football, that's when you kind of get a feel for how good your defense or how good your backfield is going to be, because I think it's really usually more run-oriented. And that's what you want to see. The one thing that I thought was curious about the tailback stats is you didn't see anything from Gerald Owens in there, and we've heard a lot about him this spring. I think he could be a short yardage guy. I think if he keeps his weight under 260, that's going to be hard. I'm always scared about guys that don't keep their weight down. All they
right.
need to do is go home from mom's cooking, come back 15 pounds overweight, and I don't. It's hard to gain the trust of a coaching staff when you got a player like that, because You know, he's got to really show that he can take care of his body. And if he does, I think that might be another asset for Michigan State in terms of short yardage. But I'm not worried about tailback. I think the O-line is going to be really good. And I think Michigan State's shown with this coaching staff that they have a commitment to running the football. So you expect them to be good running the football. And I also expect Michigan State to be good stopping the football on the other side.
Paul Konendyk, associate editor of SpartanMag.com and Spartan Magazine. Paul, fantastic insight. Appreciate you joining me on today's Current Sports, my man.
Always good to talk with you, Al.
All right, Paul. I'll be seeing you soon, my man. All right. Yeah, great stuff right there. I mean, yeah, and, you know, and looking at, you know, as Paul just touched on, I mean, yeah, Madre London is a guy, when the numbers aren't gaudy. Of course, it's spring practice. Another thing you got to realize with spring football, folks, is that, again, you know, guys... Again, they're competing for – there's a lot of position battles going on. But, again, we look at the defense knows a lot of the offensive scheme when it comes to their own team. So you got to know that the defense really has a lot and is educated a lot on what the offense is trying to do. So you kind of got to take that with a grain of salt. But, nonetheless, I mean, there were a few guys that definitely stood out in the first scrimmage. We'll see how the second one goes leading up to, of course, the spring game that will be taking place on April 25th. Again, much thanks to Paul Konendyk, associate editor of SpartanMag.com and Spartan Magazine. Great insight there. Well, 4 minutes left in the show. Man, time flies when you're having fun. Let's do a brief weekend winners if we can. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around.
All right, folks. Well, we'll end things here with just 3 minutes left here in Current Sports. It is time for Weekend Winners, where we look at the weekend that was and bring to you our Weekend Winners. Just who exactly had the best weekend in sports? Well, first off, I have to shout out Jake Hildebrand. Of course, Jake was my guest on last week's Current Sports TV. Jake is, of course, the Big Ten Hockey Player of the Year, Big Ten Goaltender of the Year. And over the weekend, Michigan State, the Michigan State Junior Goaltender, he was named to the CCM, American Hockey Coaches Association, All-America First Team. How about that? Jake Hildebrand continuing to add to the already impressive resume. So I had to shout out Jake for that remarkable accomplishment. Also, how about, of course, Jordan Spieth, 21 years old, folks, just 21 years old, and winning the Masters over the weekend. He has to be, I believe, you know, everyone's weekend winner, if you will. Also, I don't know if you guys saw this, but, of course, former Michigan State defensive end, now Tampa Bay Buccaneers player, William Golston. Alex, did you see this story? Will Golston, when he was a senior back in high school, folks, he had ran out of gas. So, you know, he runs out of gas. He goes to the nearest gas station that he sees. He has to trot a few blocks to get there. And, you know, he runs into a sales clerk at this gas station. The sales clerk was so nice, he fills up, a gasoline container for him, actually drove Will to his car to help him out of that snag. And Will didn't forget about the little people, folks. Of course, with him being big time now in the NFL, making millions of dollars, he actually returned to that same gas station and to find that same clerk and gave that clerk $100. And the clerk was so ecstatic about it, he actually posted a YouTube video that went viral. The story was actually the fourth headliner on this morning's ESPN.com. So hats off to Will Golston, folks. Don't let success and fame get to your head. Will certainly keeping that in mind. And also, my last weekend winner, the Palace of Auburn Hills. I think that this year, this Detroit Pistons season was the best Pistons season in the past 4 years. Of course, a lot had to do with that 11-game win streak as well. Sort of competing for the playoffs, even though they don't make it. It was a pretty good crowd yesterday on hand. So definitely want to shout out Pistons fans out there. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.